Previously on X-Men.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to a very mutated episode of Uncanny Treks. That's right. It's Uncanny Treks covers X-Men 97, Episode 8, Tolerance is Extinction, Part 1. I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland. Matt, how are you doing this evening?
Doing well, Bob. This show just continues to astonish me. Jesus. It's amazing how they have taken a property from 1992...
A property from 1960.
Yeah, but still, a lot of us were only exposed to the X-Men through the animated series. I watched the animated series first, then read the comics. Most people, I think, are in that boat, at least the people watching this show, in my opinion. With the exception of you, did you read X-Men before the X-Men animated series came out, Bob?
I honestly don't know if I read X-Men or saw the X-Men first, same with Batman. I think there's a good chance, though, that we would have read some X-Men without the animated series, although it's very true that we would probably have been a lot more confused had we not seen the animated series.
Exactly, Bob. I'm just telling you, X-Men 92 opened X-Men to a whole new set of fans. X-Men 97 is just bringing those fans back, ready to keep on pushing on. I just hope that Beau DeMeo is able to come back and continue whatever crazy thing he's come up with. Although I'm starting to wonder, though, and we'll talk about this later on the podcast, has he shot all of his shots?
Oh, interesting. Yep. Interesting. Okay. Well, to begin with something else that's a positive, Matt, I do think Cable should always be polishing his guns in every scene he's in. Either he should be shooting his guns or he should be polishing them. That's all he should be doing.
But, Bob, that's Cable's thing. I mean, if you would watch Deadpool 2... I'm just saying, there's a fantastic scene of Cable handling his guns. It's awesome. It's all Cable.
That's a very interesting verb you use there, Matt. Handling?
He's handling his guns. If you watch the film, you know what I'm talking about.
When's the last time you handled something, Matt?
Not too long ago.
That's good. I'm happy you handled something.
Yeah, when's the last time you polished your gun, Bob?
I don't have a gun, Matt.
I knew it.
So we do get another great Morph line, which is another dystopian future where Logan's the last to die.
Yeah, that seems to be the case with every future we go to. Logan doesn't die, and I can't think of a future without Wolverine, Bob. I mean, he will show up at some point. He'll pop up there. He's either old man. He looks scraggly. He'll look 1,000 years old. I mean, have you seen a future where Wolverine doesn't exist in the Marvel timeline?
That's an interesting question. Nothing's coming to mind. I mean, I do tend to skip alternate reality stories. When I did my big X-Men read through from Giant Size to the current day, which I started about 10 years ago and I finished about 2 years ago. Yeah, I can't really, I skipped Age of X. I skipped whatever that one they did in the aughts was. That was an alternate reality. So I couldn't really say.
Gotcha. I think he shows up everywhere, Bob. It's between Wolverine and the Hulk. One of them will be somewhere.
Yeah, that actually is an interesting point. I haven't read many Hulk comics, but it does seem a pretty common trope of Hulk comics to have Hulk in a post-apocalyptic future, from what I understand.
Yeah, and then there was even an episode of the show, I think it may have been the Days of Future Past episode, where Forge literally has Wolverine's skeleton in one of the tanks.
He does.
Trying to, I guess, recreate Wolverine. So even if Wolverine doesn't make it, people are still trying to make a clone or make another Wolverine because he has to exist.
Would that have been in One Man's Worth or would that have been in Days of Future Past?
I'm not sure. It could be either one of those. I think mixed up because in my mind...
I think it was One Man's Worth because I think that's the one with Bishop and Shard in Forge's lab.
That's correct, yes.
I could be totally wrong.
That is correct, yes. I think Days of Future Past, we just see him go back, but we only see the future timeline at the very beginning of the episode, which, Bob, brings me to my next thing, that there were two mutants who made a return.
So we get an image of a future of mutant slavery under Bastion, and we got some cameos. And so I was confused. We see a mutant with metal arms, and maybe that's Hellion, and then we see a mutant with red hair and energy powers, and I'm thinking maybe that's Mercury. They're both characters from the new X-Men series that launched right after Morrison that was very influenced by Harry Potter and had different teams at the school that were being mentored by older mutants. So I don't know. Was that who they were supposed to be, Hellion and Mercury?
No, well, actually, no, Bob. It's a throwback to the Days of Future Past episode in season one of 92. These were the two mutants in our coverage on X-Men 92 versus Young Justice. We did talk a little bit about this because we had no clue who they were. We couldn't identify them. It's just some dude with metal arms. And then I'm not even sure what the red-haired girl, what her powers are, but they both appeared at the beginning.
It seemed to be some sort of energy manipulation or energy shooting based on what she was doing in the one-second clip.
Yeah, and they both appeared in Days of Future Past at the beginning of that episode and take down a Sentinel.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think I thought they were Hellion and Mercury when we saw that. I mean, they could only be Hellion and Mercury in a retroactive sense in the X-Men cartoon, because Hellion and Mercury aren't created till the early aughts. Yeah. But yeah, that's interesting. But
then we get
We get two other exciting cameos here. We have Polaris and we have Rachel Summers. I was very excited about both.
Yeah, I hadn't seen Rachel Summers in an X-Men animated series. That was really cool to see her. We used to call her Phoenix too. So
I think they tried to finally give her a code name, which is Prestige, but I don't know.
Didn't click as well as Phoenix 2.
Yeah, I think she's always just going to be Rachel. Yeah. So speaking of good lines, Matt, we have a sad Nightcrawler line. I was too blue for Mutter.
That is so sad. I mean, she's a shapeshifter. She can be whatever she wants to be, but he can't. But she didn't accept him. She just put him in the river like Moses or whatever.
Yeah, very sad. Poor Nightcrawler. Yeah. We also get to see the person who may be Nightcrawler's mother, Val Cooper, in a Bastion uniform, which was interesting. And I was going to ask, Matt, where are you at on the Val Cooper as Mystique watch?
Oh my gosh, everybody's into this. This is the big thing. I'm hoping it's not Mystique. And I feel this episode proves it's not Mystique, because Bastion would have been able to sense that she's a mutant.
Would he, though?
I would assume all those Sentinels can detect the mutant. Somebody would have detected she's a mutant at some point.
I feel if Morph's power is strong enough that just become Quicksilver with super speed, then Mystique's power is powerful enough that she can slide under the radar. Or she has technology that she got from Sinister or someone else that would cloak her mutant signature, quote-unquote.
Chances are that's probably the direction they're going to go, Bob. I hope they don't, though. I would prefer to save some of the mutants for season two.
I don't necessarily need it revealed this season either. I don't actually have a strong feeling about whether or not Val should be Mystique or is Mystique. It's interesting either way to me. I mean, the intimacy between Magneto and Val was pretty intense and would tend to suggest that she's Mystique. But at the same time, I don't know that conversation fully makes sense if she is Mystique.
But see, my thoughts in X-Men the Animated Series, Mystique has a stronger connection with Apocalypse than she does Magneto.
I think that's pretty much only the case in the Days of Future Past and First Class movie. I don't think Mystique ever really had a big connection to Magneto in the comics.
So, I mean, there's that part. I'm just saying, I feel if we see the Apocalypse coming in season two again, I see it return in season two, we'll see Mystique as well. I just hope they wait. They need to save some stuff because we don't want to just keep, we'll drop everything. But let me ask you another question.
Maybe one thing before you ask me that question. Do you want them to do Apocalypse in season two? Because, on the one hand, maybe this is just me being silly, but it does seem an Apocalypse story might be a little too similar to what they're doing to Bastion and Sinister here.
Right. I mean, it could be. It's...
Of course, on the other hand, I mean, that's every X-Men villain's thing. Yeah. So I don't know if that's really that big a concern. But, I mean, my hope would be they would go in tonally a little bit of a different direction in season two. Although I'm, of course, down for whatever. I mean, the first eight episodes have been so good. I'm willing to go along with whatever.
And the thing is, too, though, they had to Bastion was in the original series for a short, I think in one episode. But here, he's become the main bad. And I feel they did a good job of building up another main bad for X-Men. Because if you remember in our coverage, I mean, we've talked about primarily Mr. Sinister, Magneto, Apocalypse, and that's it. your big bads are those three. Adding Bastion to that crowd is good. They've added another one. I don't know if they'll do another newer villain in season two or bring back Apocalypse.
Well, and just to slightly modify what you're saying, since Bastion is a form of Nimrod, we see Nimrod in X-Men 92, but we don't see Bastion in X-Men 92.
Yeah, it's the evolved form of Bastion and Master Mold.
I don't want to get yelled at on Twitter.
Yeah. Thank you, Bob. I wouldn't want the people on X.
Yeah. Those people on X, man, they're dangerous. They're dangerous.
Well, let me tell you something else, Bob. Does it freak you out a little bit that a Val Cooper looks like Bastion's mom?
To be honest, I didn't make that connection, but then I just assume all white women look alike, so.
Yeah. There's also this callback that Bastion's mom is actually the bigot who tells on Storm Wolverine in the One Man's Worth episode in the diner. They look the exact same.
Oh, so interesting.
Very big. Some big connections there. I think there's a reason Bo DeMeo gave us homework to watch all these episodes before watching this one.
Interesting.
And to boost the Disney Plus numbers.
Speaking of sinister bigotry, I really do like Mr. Sinister's line about Joseph Mengele. I knew Mengele. He could have been so much more, but he settled on being a Nazi pup.
God.
That was great.
Oh, that's insane.
We also get, man, it was pretty messed up that Magneto still has his death camp tattoo. And we see it as Magneto is sprayed naked on the St. Andrew's cross or the X. That was messed up.
Yeah, like, why Bastion gotta have naked Magneto in the basement? I mean, who doesn't want Magneto naked in the basement? But come on, it's weird, man.
It was
a very cool scene. I'm probably not gonna forget just the imagery piece of it. Because it's like him down to his bear, like, you know, just as much as they could get away with on TV.
That's
raw Magneto, dog.
Raw Magneto. Yeah, between that and the straight razor from my last episode, mm-hmm. The implication is Magneto has not had a good time.
No, not at all.
I do like, speaking of Bastion's backstory, we find out that he was a Tony Stark or maybe a Howard Stark fanboy, and that's very amusing.
Yeah, of course he was, Bob. And can I say that I have started the Fraction run, and the random appearance of Tony Stark in one of the early issues made me think he was his father because of the way he's always drawn to look more like the Howard Stark look that you see in the comics as opposed to Robert Downey Jr. And it's a thing that does not click right in my brain. And maybe other people experience this as well. Like, it bothers me. Even in the newer games, the Midnight Suns, Tony Stark's there, and he looks so much more like the guy who plays Howard than he does Robert Downey Jr.
And I think in terms RDJ. Of time, the Fraction run started, I want to say it started right before Iron Man 1.
I think so, yes.
Are you liking that run so far?
It's compared to the Morrison and the Joss Whedon run, it's not as good.
Oh, you're talking about the Matt Fraction X-Men run.
Oh, yes, the X-Men run. Excuse me, I'm sorry. Not the Iron Man run.
Yeah, I thought you were talking about the Matt Fraction Iron Man run.
I think I read the Fraction run a long, long time ago. I believe that's the one where Iron Man loses all his armor, gets rid of all his armor.
And it's basically Fraction has to reboot Iron Man to redeem him for being the bad guy in Civil War.
Yeah, it was a bit cheesy, but I enjoyed it because it was an interesting Odyssey type trip into Iron Man's past.
We sort of disagree here. If I really like the Fraction X-Men run, and I don't really care for the Fraction Iron Man run, but I don't even blame Fraction for that. I just think on the one hand, I don't really like Iron Man, and on the other, I also think, let me know if you agree with this, but I think Iron Man comics are just the most dated superhero comic. They're all, because they have to be so of the moment technology, just, within 5 years, they look so dated.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's true, because they the newest thing is there. That's also interesting, too, as I've been doing my run through, the technology piece in Morrison's run, what they were using, basically beepers and flip phones and stuff, and then it kept going. And as you go through the runs, now I'm at Fraction, and they finally have iPhones. Or what it looks like iPhones. And I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
But see, I can see what you're saying with Iron Man. They have to constantly have whatever that new thing is. And that's supposed to be the best of the best, but it's not. The movies are the same way, though, at this point. Some of the stuff you see in the older movies that was really clear, that's we could probably have that now.
What stories have you read in the Fraction run so far?
I've read all the way up through where they just exhumed Jean Grey's body and they were trying to put Psylocke or Betsy. They want a goblin. A Red Queen wants to put her essence into that, into Jean Grey's body or something. I don't. That plot was so convoluted, and that was, I actually wrote a review on it on Goodreads. If anybody's bored and ever wants to follow my stuff, MattW705. I went through and the whole Red Goblin or Red Queen thing is, it's over sexualized first off, and it's also just hard to follow what's actually going. She's trying to take Psylocke's body and Jean Grey's power and somehow combine the two, or and then put her essence into it. It's just I don't understand her actual, what she wants. All I know is it's created some crazy imagery. And then on top of all that, you have everybody in San Francisco with the Hellfire cult attacking mutants, attacking Pixie was the big one there, and that starts a whole fight and everything. It's interesting. I did like the idea of San Francisco as this safe haven for mutants, but it immediately turns into hell just as bad as it was in New York.
And it is interesting that you can sort of see Fraction doing, I mean, it's not exactly the same thing as Krakoa, but it's sort of similar.
It's a smaller, like, it's a less magical version of Krakoa, let's put it that way. less interesting, in my opinion. But I felt the whole plot between Scott, Emma, and Red Queen is just very convoluted. And I was able to follow to some degree, but I'm just like, if I have to sit here, like, go line to line trying to figure out exactly what's happening, you're not doing a good job of telling the story.
Yeah, so the stuff I really liked was, I think the one you're mostly complaining about with Psylocke is the trade sisterhood. And I think my favorite was the one called Lovelorn, which I think, if I'm remembering right, that has a lot of different Emma Frost, Cyclops, and Namor stuff in it. And that, to me, was a high point.
The Namor stuff's good. Yeah, that's part of it, yes. The Cyclops, Emma, them having to figure themselves out, what's going on there. And Cyclops has a black box in his head that I guess he's keeping his memories of Jean Grey in. That stuff I'm okay with. Some of the others, it's just too much. He's got too many things going on at one time.
Which is always the problem of, like, writing X-Men comics, right? The cast is so huge.
Yeah. Narrowing it down to a couple, or letting, like, some of the tie-ins maybe do their thing with those characters.
Yeah, but I think at this era, right, we've come to an era where it's just all the main X-Men are in one book, and then the tie-ins are your X-Factor, your X-Force, more your side characters.
Yeah. Now, X-Force is awesome. I have to give you that. And that's where a lot of the stuff we're talking about now with Bastion, a very similar plot line.
We do have a lot of other cameos here. Specifically, we have Bastion having a Zoom conference with a bunch of bad guys. And the takeaway line here is, of course, from Dr. Doom. Do not mistake Doom's collusion as indifference to your flagrant war crimes.
I mean, who can imagine we would have seen Doom and Baron Zemo working with, or trying to, like, get in with Bastion here. This is awesome. I love that they're making bigger connections to the MCU.
I'm not complaining about it. I'm just saying some moron was saying he wants them to do Secret Wars or Galactus. And it's just, no, that's dumb. Why would you do that?
Yeah, I agree with that.
I think the level to which they've had Captain America or Doom or Spider-Man, spoilers, in this series is, like, perfect. Why would you want any more than what they have?
Right, short cameos. That's the way to go.
If you really want to, you could do your Spider-Man 98 or your Fantastic Four 97 or your Iron Man or Forceworks 97. I mean, I really only want to see Spider-Man and Silver Surfer revivals. I don't think those other shows need to be revived.
Yeah, if I can get the Spider-Man, I'd be happy, because I want them to be able to tell to finish the story. That one didn't have a very satisfying ending.
I don't know that I want them to finish that story, Matt. That story wasn't very good.
They'll find a way to make it better. They can write it. Some creative writer will come up with something, and we'll be fixed on the first episode. Then we can get back to the norms.
The darkest thing would be, technically, Spider-Man Unlimited is the sequel to Spider-Man. Yeah. And so, gotta wrap up Spider-Man Unlimited stuff, too.
We'll just get rid of that. There'll be some time thing that'll
mess
that up.
Get rid of Secret Wars and get rid of the Spider-Man Unlimited and just tell actual Spider-Man stories.
Yeah, maybe they could tie it to the MCU, Bob.
So another question, Matt, is Kate's Coffee a reference that I didn't get, or is that the coffee shop in One Man's Worth?
I looked at it, and it's not the coffee shop in One Man's Worth.
Because the one in One Man's Worth was a beatnik one, right?
Yeah, but they focused on that coffee cup for way too long. So I was either thinking that she's recording the message. This is before she turned into the Sentinel. She was either recording what he was saying, or she was going to poison him, or I don't know what was going on. I mean, but they focused on it way too long, and then whatever. I mean, I guess maybe it was a hint that something sinister was happening, but you couldn't tell. I don't know. It did spark that in my head, like, oh, something. There's something weird about them showing that coffee cup. Something crazy is about to happen, but the coffee cup didn't have anything to do with it.
Huh. Perhaps it's just the coffee shop that the writer's room was using and they really like. I don't know.
Yeah. Could be it.
Yeah, I did find something satisfying about, we have Trish Tilby unveiled as Prime Sentinel. We have her fight the arguably the three most similar X-Men, which is to say Beast, Wolverine, and Nightcrawler. I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, I mean, and Trish Tilby, which she's been around for a long time, right, in the comics?
Yeah. She's at least goes back to X-Factor when X-Factor was the original five.
And I remember she's
in the Morrison run.
Right, yeah. I know her from the Morrison run, but I knew she was before that.
I do hope, apropos of Morph turning into Juggernaut, I actually would like to see in future seasons Juggernaut join the team for real, as he did in the 21st century.
That would be cool. And seeing Juggernaut out of nowhere here, this Morph thing is a trope that I look forward to. When they come flying at you, it's like, what is this? Oh, it's Quicksilver. Oh, it's Juggernaut. Oh, it's, what was it, an Archangel. Getting to see those mutants on the screen, even though they're not actually there, it's awesome. Love it.
Yeah, I enjoy the cameo watch of it all. I'm still really annoyed every time I have to see or have the discussion about Morph's power set, because it's so stupid. They're all physical powers. They're mutations. They're physical. That distinction makes me angry.
I'm hoping the comic book explains something about this. I know I mentioned this last week, but I just want the tie-in comic to just clarify.
Well, no, I think DeMeo clarified on Twitter.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, no, as I understand it, I didn't pay much attention to it because it pains me. But as I understand it, the distinction is that DeMeo says he can copy physical powers, which is to say things like Quicksilver speed or Juggernaut strength, but he can't do stuff like Storm's weather manipulation or telepathy or telekinesis, which I just think that's ridiculous, because they're all physical powers. They all result from mutation, right?
Like, right. It doesn't make any sense, because, I mean, if you can shoot lasers from your eyes, that's still physical, because it's part of your anatomy, your genes, your genetics.
yeah. And it has like a physical manifestation in your, like, in your body. Like,
Can we just say that maybe Quicksilver, they were just running really fast, and it was not necessarily that they were Quicksilver speed? Like,
yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. Obviously, DeMeo did a much better job writing this season than I ever could. Yeah. So, but it's just like, come on, man. Like, yeah. I had the right answer. It's just Morph can takes the form to use the form, right? Bigger as Colossus or Juggernaut, maybe they turn part of their skin into Colossus's steel, right? Like,
right. It doesn't have to be more complicated than that. I feel like if Quicksilver hadn't made the appearance, running so quickly, it would not have been an issue.
You're right that we should just assume Quicksilver is running very fast, but at normal human speed, yeah. with Morph as Quicksilver. But still, yeah, it's annoying to think about. All right, happier stuff. Matt, something involving Jubilee made you happy, right?
Oh, yeah, Bob. I am more psyched that Jubilee is actually getting a new outfit. The all-black getup with a yellow rain jacket looks way more late 90s than it does what she had in the early 90s. It also adult, too, because I guess
it may look more 90s, but it's really, I think it's fully from, like, the aughts in the 2010s.
Yeah, I think that's what she wore during the vampire time, right? And she was
vampire. Maybe before the vampire time even. But yeah, definitely during the vampire time, because she needed that full skin coverage.
But she also had that same outfit, though, Bob, in Generation X, but it was pink.
But it's a little different in the Generation X.
But it's good to see she has an actual uniform and not just the jeans with the red shirt, pink shirt, whatever.
Yeah, and I mean, it was nice nostalgia that we see her and Sunspot at the mall get attacked by a Sentinel. Yeah. That's good nostalgia.
Very good nostalgia.
So, Matt, we've seen also a lot of sad fanboys like me are arguing about what powers Morph can and cannot take on. And a lot of even sadder fanboys are arguing that there's not enough Wolverine in this series. Do you think they can finally shut up after the scene of Wolverine falling through the air, slicing some Prime Sentinels?
I hope so. Man, we do not need more Wolverine for anything. We do not need Wolverine. The man has 5 movies.
Yeah.
he was the entirety of it. 4 or 5 seasons of X-Men 92. I mean, come on. Like, for the most part, if you took every episode that featured Wolverine from the original series, they'd dominate.
In the last cartoon, he was the title character.
Yeah,
I mean, it was a good series, but Jesus, it was Wolverine and the X-Men.
Right. Come on. I mean, now, my thing here, though, Bob, him slicing up all those Prime Sentinels, just cutting all through them, those are people, right?
Well, not anymore.
No, they're not. He's straight up murdering folks in the sky. I mean, just slicing straight through them. And
the only question, Matt, is the not anymore. Is it not anymore because Wolverine cut them in half, or is it not anymore because Bastion killed them to make them the Prime Sentinels?
Yeah, that's the real question we need to know. If they become a Prime Sentinel, are they automatically dead, or can they shift back to their human form? and Wolverine cutting them up, I mean, it was a good way, too, to get around the whole blood thing, because...
Yeah.
They bleed pink, apparently, and it goes everywhere.
So, Matt, how happy did Nightcrawler's third sword make you?
I was absolutely amazed at how cool that was. I'm very disappointed the action figure didn't come with swords. There's no swords. Shame on you, Hasbro. You had a perfect opportunity to give the man swords. Even the original action figure came with a damn sword. Give him some swords.
I'm just thinking about how difficult, at least I imagine, maybe I'm wrong, but I'm imagining how difficult it would be to design an action figure where the third sword could be carried by the tail.
Not that difficult. You just need a hole.
Hey-o.
Hey-o. That's really all it is. Especially the price of action figures now, Bob. They can figure it out. Trust me. But my favorite part of this entire sequence, though, was not just the sword fight or the swords. It was seeing Kurt pull Wolverine and that dude that just got, like, gutted through the brimstone dimension. I don't think we've ever seen that visually in a cartoon or on the movies. That was awesome. He got slightly stretched, and you see him come back, and then he's in a different place. You see it from Wolverine's perspective. I love that scene.
To be honest, I think I totally missed that.
Yeah, watch that scene. I mean, it's amazing. I'm wow. Never thought we'd ever see that. That's what it looks like when you get teleported.
Crazy, crazy. Speaking of new things, this is the first time we've seen Sunspot's full Sunspot form, right?
Yeah, but we need him in a uniform, Bob. And I doubt they're going to go for his X-Force look. They're probably going to go for the New Mutants thing. Because I don't... The X-Force look, I've always liked that red, yellow, and the blue piece at the middle. I always liked that look. Because it looked like he was containing the sun inside. It's a really cool suit. But I think they're just going to give him a basic X-Men uniform, which is okay.
Yeah, a lot of precedent for that, I think. So, speaking of X-Force stuff, I really love all Cable's petulance late in this episode, especially him saying to, I'm just going to refer to Jean as his aunt, and he's just, quit bossing me around. Yeah,
that whole family dynamic piece with them is just so weird. Like, I don't even know how you'd explain that to anybody.
It's weird, but it's charming.
Yes,
right?
It is.
And I do like that Cable, in the grand spirit of Wolverine and Jean, has also made his father a convertible.
This is the third time we've seen this happen now, Bob. Did you catch Scott's license plate?
I think I did, but I forgot it. What was it?
It says Slim.
Oh, okay. No, I guess I didn't catch
that.
That's funny.
Personalized license plate.
Do you think Slim Summers is not the name others gave him? It's the name that he just repeated constantly until a couple people occasionally would say it?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he did.
Did maybe Jean actually go to Wolverine at night and she's, could you just call Scott Slim? It would make him so happy. In some versions, especially in the 60s, he is really skinny. And then it's also Stan Lee likes alliteration. I think that goes back to the Silver Age X-Men. And so I think it's also just Stan likes alliteration.
Well, Bob, also...
I will say, even though we're making fun of the Cable, Scott, and Jean dynamic, the dynamic where Jean takes the wheel for Scott with her telekinesis, I thought that was great.
That scene was awesome. And Cyclops blasting through the mountain as they go through it. I mean, his powers... They're on blast here, man. It's Omega level at this point.
Then we get a pretty amazing line from Val, which was Magneto knows us better than Xavier ever did. That's right. Us being humanity, of course.
Yeah, Magneto was right, Bob. Let's go get you want to get matching tattoos.
I'm not really a tattoo guy, but
I'm
Magneto was right.
I'm not either, but I would totally get a Magneto's right tattoo, I think.
Also, since we're talking about annoying things online about people saying about the show, I'm annoyed about people complaining about there's not enough Wolverine. I'm annoyed about the discourse over Morph's shapeshifting. And I'm annoyed at the discourse of, oh, we need more Marvel crossover. We need to fully bring this cartoon into the MCU. Then also, I'm really annoyed by the debate of, like, people were confused by what Magneto did here. And it's, my man, it's an EMP. Isn't that obvious?
It's like, not that complicated. All the power was going out. It showed it. It's not that. Jeez. Anyway.
Yeah, during Magneto's very complicated and hard to understand EMP, we do get some more cameos, specifically Silver Samurai, Omega Red, and then your favorite and mine, Spider-Man.
Going back to what you just said, the bubble, I want to point one thing out. Earlier I mentioned how complicated Matt Fraction's run is to follow. I can't imagine these people trying to follow that run if they can't get the Magneto to use the damn EMP. All right, back to the cameos, though. We already talked a little bit about Spider-Man, how we both want to see a sequel, 98.
And people are already putting, like, fake news out. No, at least I think it's fake news that, oh, they're doing Spider-Man 98.
It's all fake, because if we saw Spider-Man, they're automatically going to say that. But I recently caught the tail end of the Wolverine on FX.
That's Wolverine 2, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
You see how much easier it is when we do it like this?
Anyway.
Numbers are so much easier than different names.
My thing,
oh,
too.
No, that's the Dark Knight Descends, Bob. Yeah. It's not the Dark Knight Ascends.
In my brain, Bob, I usually just picture who the villain of the film is, and that's how I remember which one. So I know that in the Wolverine, it was Silver Samurai. But Silver Samurai is actually cool in this film, but he's not the way he is in the comics. It's more of a mech suit that he uses. And he's got a sword, though. Like, it like lights up, and he cuts through Wolverine's claws. It's cool.
See, I just dislike it, because I know the person who designed that Silver Samurai for Wolverine 2 was just, samurais are boring. I don't like Kurosawa films. I need to do something cool and modern. Have you watched any anime, bro?
Yes, Bob, that's probably how it went down, but it turned out neat. So I'm going to leave it at that. Now, that movie is not great. But don't watch the film unless you're bored. But, I mean,
just to clarify in my mind, so I've never seen a Wolverine film other than every other X-Men film, which all of which are Wolverine films. But the actual solo Wolverine films, there's X-Men Origins : Wolverine. Is that the name of the first one?
Yes.
And then there's The Wolverine is the one that's more in Japan and has Silver Samurai. And then there's just Logan, right? That's all of it?
Yes, that's all three.
And now there'll be Deadpool and Wolverine.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, so I do have to end on a somewhat disappointed note for me, at least, Matt, which is, I knew Xavier was coming back after the Shi'ar episode. I was hoping he wasn't coming back before that, but after the Shi'ar episode, clearly he's coming back. But I don't know. I mean, maybe they'll do something cool with him, but I really don't want Xavier back. I really like the X-Men better without Xavier a lot of the times, and would have much rather had like a dramatic return of Rogue or Storm at the end of this episode, to be honest.
I would have liked to have seen Magneto drop the line and it be somehow recorded or transmitted on TV so everybody would know that he'd be like, to me, by X-Men, then they think that the X-Men are like part of this whole thing that's taking shape.
One question that raises, do you think the end result of this is just going to be to go back to the usual X-Men versus Magneto, but just with a more tragic arc to make Magneto have become a villain again?
Yeah, I think that's the direction they're going.
Which I don't love. I mean, I have faith that they can maybe do it in a way that will be more interesting than it sounds just describing it. But yeah, I don't love that.
So did you like that the spacesuit Xavier was wearing was the same one that haunted us throughout season 3 of X-Men?
I caught it. I don't have strong feelings about it. Like I said, mostly just overwhelmed by Xavier-related disappointment.
All right, you have any strong feelings about Xavier walking? He may walk using his robot legs that
I didn't even notice what he was doing at the end of this episode. I guess he should.
He didn't come out of the ship. But I'm just saying, is he going to walk out or is he going to have to like go get the chair?
I think he'll probably walk out, and then I think presumably in the big fight with Magneto or Bastion or something, he will be re-paralyzed and be back in the chair, would be my assumption.
That makes sense. They'll probably bust up his Shi'ar legs.
Yeah. Poor Xavier. Xavier.
Another big complaint that people online keep going on about are how many stories are being condensed into this season. And I just need them to like back off a little bit, because if you go up and watch the original run, they literally had the Phoenix Saga and the Dark Phoenix Saga in a single season. with all kinds of other stuff in between. It's not that unusual to fit this many stories into one thing. Because we've, I mean, we really have run rampant through all kinds of things we've seen in X-Men over the last 50, 60 years. But it's still, it's being done well. If we were just jumping around and just, here's this, and that was it, that would be a problem. But it's being done where it makes sense within the story.
Yeah, we have like 60 plus years of X-Men stories, and now granted a lot of that is terrible, but a lot of that is great, and there's a lot to cover. And I've made fun of this idea before too, that people are complaining about this. I have maybe somewhat more sympathy for people complaining about this than some of the other stuff, but I would still just say, like you say, the question is, are they doing it well? I think they're doing it well. And people also need to remember, like, how long did it take us to get these 10 episodes? Like 3 or 4 years? You're not going to get your 30-part Inferno adaptation or your 30-part Age of Apocalypse. Disney's not going to do that. And even if they were going to do that, it would take them 10 years to do it. Or the animation would have to be crap. It was in the 90s. What we're getting is very good, and I think we should be satisfied with it.
Here's hoping that they don't rush Season 2 or Season 3.
Yeah, yeah. I would rather wait a little and have very good animation rather than rush for slightly subpar animation. Yeah. So, Matt, who's your character of the week?
Well, my character of the week actually goes to Bastion. I thought he was going to be a lame villain choice at first, but they've done him right. I think it's good. It's good stuff.
Matt's got a really sophisticated point here about empathy and about changing his mind and about character development over the course of a season, over the course of decades. My point is, Third Sword, really cool. So, Nightcrawler.
It was pretty cool, Bob. I give
to
you
which
that.
Matt could also reply, Brimstone Dimension, really cool.
You need to go watch that. Go back and watch to make sure you don't miss that scene. It was awesome.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well... Love that Nightcrawler. So this has been X-Men 97 coverage for Uncanny Trex. Check us out on Patreon for our coverage of X-Men 92 and Young Justice. Follow us for other episodes. We recently released an episode about that amazing show Fallout that I just loved talking about. We'll see you next week for the next episode.
Thanks for listening.